Last night we had an initiation for new Kriya initiates. And when we do that, those of us who have taken Kriya, which is the type of meditation that Yogananda actually came to the West to teach this way to meditate that takes us very deep into our astral spine. It really clears the way for our soul to reunite with the divine. Very powerful, very beautiful technique. I don't know how many of you are Kriyavans. I can't even quite see all of you right now. But if you're not, feel free to ask any of us about it after service. So usually a couple of times a year we have a Kriya initiation and renewal. We all go to as many of those as we can. They're very sacred events. Last night there were about 85 of us or so here, maybe a few more. And throughout the whole evening, I felt so joyful right from the beginning. I usually at Kriya, I feel like this is sacred and inward and quiet and very uplifted. And it is all of that. But I have to say throughout the whole evening last night, and even when we were leaving, I mean, I was just hugging everybody. When I left, I thought, I just felt like I was in this astral party. That's how it felt to me. It was just people were shaking their heads. Yes, that's unusual. And the feeling is still with me today. So there's a part of me that wants to come out and say, don't worry, everything's great. We can't fail. You know, celebrate it like that. It's sort of where my heart and soul is. And it's the truth. Anyway, it's all the truth. The joy is the truth. The fact that we really ultimately can't fail. There's only one show going on here. And that show is that we come in, our souls reincarnate into this body or another body or all the many other bodies we've been in. And eventually we reunite that soul with the soul of the divine. And we remember we were always one to begin with. We were never really separate, but we've been living this delusion for many, many, many years. But we're all on that path. A disciple once asked Yogananda, am I going to fall off the path, Master? And Master looked at him and said, how could you? Everybody's on a spiritual path. And we're all on this spiritual path. That's the truth. Interestingly, that devotee did leave that path. He left Yogananda. But he's just taking a detour. It's still just the goal is always the same. And we cannot fail, but we can determine how long it's going to take us to succeed is the only thing. That's always up to us. When I was looking out last night at everybody, even before then, actually, I told everybody this last night, I had this experience in the afternoon as I was at home and meditating and reading and then meditating a little more. I just started calling to mind so many of my guru bhais. That means other great souls who are following the same guru as I am. And I was just thinking of so many people. I probably went through at least 30 people in my mind who would be coming for Kriya last night. And as I was thinking of everybody, I thought, wow, we have collectively put in so many years, so many lifetimes of work, effort, joyful at times. Sometimes you fall and it hurts. And sometimes you fall hard and that hurts more. But everybody who was there last night, and honestly, everybody who's here today, it's not simply about Kriya, it was just about this experience of knowing this dear family that I'm a part of and how hard we have worked to get here. What we've had to do to be in this extraordinary position, this blessed position of being called here and of, as Jesus said, having ears to hear. So we thought it was a good idea to come to this temple, to come to a Sunday service, to learn to meditate, to sing these beautiful chants. These, Karen was singing at a wedding the other night, solo. She did the whole wedding. I don't know how many songs there were. It was fabulous. It was a very tiny wedding. So it was just Karen and I and the bride and groom, and she sang the whole thing. And she said, these are prayers put to music. This is Swamiji's songs, the ones that he's included in the wedding. And it was just so true, and it was so beautiful to think of it that way. And the chants that were done this morning, I'm just saying, we've all made it right to this moment where we are so uplifted and having so much grace pour into our lives. But we have all, in one life or another, I myself can say, I remember, for better or for worse, even in this very life, the ways that I've slipped off the path for a while in thought, in deed, even if I was still meditating every day, twice a day, even if I was still deeply devoted, I haven't always behaved well. So I've made mistakes, I've tripped, but it doesn't mean that we've fallen off the path. We really, in a way, cannot do that. And that is the great good news. Of course, the first person who came to mind last night, I went home and was thinking about this talk today, and I thought of Judas because it's such a powerful story. I mean, here he was, we all know the story, of course, one of the 12 main disciples of Jesus Christ. I mean, chosen to be right with an avatar day and night. And he betrays Jesus. He turns him in. And then Jesus is crucified. And when I was in Israel this last time, it came into me in such a deep way what that would have been like to be Judas. For 30 silver coins, you turn in God himself, and then he's crucified. I mean, think of it. All of a sudden, all of the ways that I've failed in this life, and I don't know about past lives, I don't remember, thank you, God, but I'm sure I did, big time. And I mean, he was so devastated by it when he realized what he had done, when he realized that Jesus was being crucified, he hung himself. I mean, we all know the story. He couldn't live with himself. That was right about the year zero. And 2,000 years later, which is a blink in terms of eternity and yugas and all of this huge amount of time, Yogananda told us that he was a disciple of Ramakrishna, and he was actually freed. That means he transcended, neutralized, was beyond all karma. He was a free soul. So it's so deeply, deeply reassuring in some ways. That was a pretty egregious crime. Somebody was telling me that they were in a conversation with them. It was an egregious crime, and he was free pretty soon after. That's the point. So what does it mean to fail spiritually? Really, what it means is, again, we're just taking detours, and we get back on the main road. We have to. Somebody was telling me about this conversation that they had with Swami Kriyananda, and they were talking about Hitler and talking about a lot of what had happened in Hitler's time by his own hand. Again, pretty horrible, unthinkable crimes. I mean, in the way that it wasn't just like killing somebody. it was first spending a long time torturing them and everything else that happened. And Swamiji listened, and they were talking, and then he just looked at this person, and he said, this was Dr. Peter from the village was telling me this once, and Swamiji said, but you know, of course, he'll be free someday. He'll be a free soul. And Master told us that Stalin, I think his words were, if these weren't his exact words, he meant this. I mean, he used words that said the same thing. He said Stalin was so awful that he made Hitler look like a Boy Scout. Those were his words. But then he also turned to whoever he was talking to, and he said, but he too will be free. So we have it made, those of us in this room. I mean, when you hear these stories, and it doesn't mean that we can relax into it. I mean, most of us wouldn't even want to. We don't want to do anything awful. We don't. I'm working on getting rid of this before I leave the body, which I feel is getting closer and closer. So I better do this quickly. I don't want to have regrets. I don't want to leave that way. Master said, it's a bad thing, but I don't feel great about some of the ways that I've caused people pain in this life. It's just, it's happened. But that mind that would blame us, hold us down, I forget the words in the reading, but something about hellfire sounds pretty awful, whatever the sentence was. No, that's not what little God is. That's not what that beautiful, divine, loving, all-inclusive, expansive, pure devotion, pure light. That thought never even comes to that mind. That mind doesn't have a mind, but that thought never comes to that energy. But it's with us. So we worry, can I fail? Can I fail? Will I get back on? Am I going to be punished? Not like that. The only punishment, the only pain we feel is that pain that our soul feels because we're separating ourselves from our divine home, from where our soul and our heart long to be, know we need to be. But for various reasons, we're just taking our time. Last night when I was praying, I didn't know where this, I mean, I knew where the phrase would come from, that it was there. At some point in the prayer, I said, give us the courage to remove all obstacles. And in my mind, even as I was praying, I thought, yes, it takes enormous courage to even want to let go of all of the things that we're attached to all of our habits from so many lives. So we're making mistakes, but we can learn from our mistakes. Very often making a mistake puts us in a better position on the other side of it than we were in to begin with, if we'll see it that way. And that's part of our job, is not to dwell on the mistakes we made, to really remember whether we've done something wonderful or horrible. God is the doer. God did all of it. We have to give all of that. Say, look how you acted through me today. Because dwelling on it is the next egoic behavior. It's the next thing. When we sit and we're thinking, repent, 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 me, 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 I have to. No, we don't. Our job is to look at it, learn from it, and move on, and remember again who we are. I wanted to just read a few of the lines here from the Bhagavad Gita. I love the Bhagavad Gita. I love how Swami Kriyananda explains it. Last night I spent a couple of hours after I got home just reading parts of that book, actually first chapter 6, which is where this reading's from. You know, Krishna, who of course is God himself, speaking to Arjuna, who represents all of us, he says, everything that's the truth. And you feel truth. You feel the challenge that it is with these egos in our way to live in terms of truth. You can just see all of the places that you could so easily trip. But in that, in his teaching, always comes, here's what it is, Arjuna. Here's what you need to do. Listen to me. You can do this. And it's hard. You hear, you feel how hard it is. You feel the struggle. I mean, Arjuna refused to fight. He refused to do it for a while. What a high soul he must have been to be sitting in the chariot with God himself. And yet when God himself said to him, fight, he throws down his bow and arrow. He goes, no way. I'm not letting go of everything that I've known and loved about myself all of these years, all of the ways that I feel safe and secure. No, I'm not doing that because it's hard. But there's always, always, at the end of every few stanzas where Krishna is saying, don't worry, whatever happens, I'm here. I have you. I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to keep at you, and I'm going to keep asking you to work as hard as you can, but I'm not going to leave you. And it's so beautiful. One always feels so held in God's arms by that scripture. It's just, I guess, the time that Krishna lived. Krishna was who he was, but so was Jesus. And it's not always, of course, Jesus loved everybody. He saw them as purely divine too. But there's an edge to the Bible, a different kind of an edge. And the Gita just lets you go, ah, okay, all right, still safe. This is what it feels like. And, you know, there's that stanza, it's not in today's reading. And I won't be able to recall it all. It's written, or at least translated, so beautifully. But God's saying, be with me in every moment. Think of nothing but me. Keep your eye on me, your focus, your heart, your soul. If you can't do that, then work for me. Every bit of work that you do, offer it to me. He just goes on. There's about four options that we have, and they start like here, and then they go, and can you do this? If you can't do that, do this. Think of me all the time, he says. You can't think of me, offer me your work. Offer whatever you are doing. But at the very end of that, and we know this, this is one of the famous lines of the Gita, made famous by all of us who went, oh, thank God, because he says, and if in this, whatever the last thing is that he's saying, if in this thy faint heart fails, give me thy failures. Really saying that even as we offer God our failures, we're connecting with him. We're reaching to him. That's one of the points, a major point about this story with the 10 virgins, 10 good virgins, 10 bad virgins. Surprisingly hard word to keep saying, but they were bad because they fell asleep on the job. And of course, that's the whole point of the story of our spiritual path. Don't go to sleep. You never know, as St. Paul says, like a thief in the night, God will just appear. And if you're sleeping, and what does that mean in our lives? That's a beautiful story of that Devarshi told, I've told it here several times, where he was on his way to a weekly three-hour meditation, an all-men's meditation that he used to go to. And he was feeling lazy. He didn't want to go. He was walking over the land up at the village, sort of convincing himself, I don't need to be there, I don't need to be there. And then all of a sudden the thought comes, tonight could be the night. Tonight could be the night. God could come to you tonight. This could be your samadhi. And of course, he went to the meditation. That's the point. Like a thief in the night, we don't know. So it is our job to be present, to be doing the best we can to see God everywhere, to keep our hearts open to remind ourselves to let go of all of the bad habits, to behave ourselves, as Sri Yukteswar said. But here is the point about the virgins. Even though God came and he said, whatever the phrase is, which I don't have right now, but I don't know you. I think he actually said that. I don't know you. And he looks at the five virgins who had their lamps lit, who had, were awake with their devotion, who were uplifted towards God. That's who got to experience cosmic consciousness that night, because that's what was coming, that descent of cosmic consciousness for them. But the other five virgins still knew enough to know that they wanted to be there. They went there. They tried to wait for God. So they're not lost to the idea. They're not as bad as it seems. And somewhere Swamiji says in one of his interpretations of this, well, they blew it that night, right? It's just like the Jews who were waiting for Elijah. It's like, oh, I feel so badly at times. I'd love to tell them, but I know they wouldn't hear it or listen. He's been here. He is here. You don't have to wait for anything. God is here right now. And he was there. But they had the intention. They wanted to see God. That means so much. As I said last night, Master says, center everywhere, circumference nowhere. The vast majority of people love living way out on the periphery. They're happy out there at the circumference, not even dreaming that there's a center to go to. So those virgins were not that bad. They're good people. They're highly evolved souls, just not quite yet. I have here an expanded version of the little bit. Swamiji just wrote two lines of the Gita here, but I wanted to read just a little bit to you. Arjuna asks Krishna, what is the fate of him who strives with faith but fails and loses heart or even falls from holiness, missing the perfect rule? Now, there's much more. I'm leaving pieces of it out for those of you who know the Gita perfectly. And then Krishna says to him, Arjuna, just what Swamiji wrote for us, none who works for self-redemption will ever meet an evil destiny. So that in and of itself is just, again, so reassuring, so comforting. Every step we take towards God, every good deed we do, every meditation we have, every time we're generous, think a good thought, we are moving in the right direction. We're working for self-redemption. And Krishna says, we'll never meet an evil destiny. But he goes on to say that which I think is very important that Swamiji couldn't put in here. Let me just find that part itself, though I'd love to read all of this to you. First of all, he says returning here, meaning next life. His good deeds of the past awaken in his heart the urge to seek his former path with ever greater zeal. That's wonderful too. All of the work we're doing, it doesn't get lost when we leave these bodies. We come back, we've made progress, and something in us, something our soul can speak louder to us and say, you want more than this. You know there's more. And we pick up that battle again, and we wind up as disciples of a great master or Kriyabans or wherever we are on this path. Because we've made a huge amount of spiritual progress already. Even that man who deeply longs to know the subtle yoga path is more advanced than those who merely practice outward rites or follow scripture for their private gain. He's saying, when you really want to know God, when you know that there's a subtle yogic path to be on, Raja Yoga, so many of you have taken that course. All of the ways that life, a yogic life, not just Hatha or any one type of yoga, though they all begin to lead us there. But he's saying this is so much better than those people who are just reading books, who are just trying to get it mentally. It won't happen that way. So again, we're already so far on our way. And then he says, greater the yogi is than they who quell their senses with ascetic discipline, greater than they who seek to plumb the depths of truth by reasoning and wise dispute, better than they who seek by works alone to impress the Lord, who is himself those works. So he's saying you can do anything in the world. You can wear a loincloth. You can study all the great books. You can try and impress God with what you do. None of that, he says, is like somebody who is seeking on the yogic path, that path which teaches us self-realization, that path which says you are the divine. Go within. It's not out there, even in the books, even in the denial of all of the foods and the clothes and the money. That's not where it is. It's in your heart. Open your heart and I will enter. Get on this path of realizing our true selves. And then this beautiful line where he says, be thou therefore a yogi, O Arjuna, he who absorbs his mind and soul in me unceasingly, established in my rest, know him to be among all yogis the best. That beautiful line, be thou a yogi, Arjuna. Get onto this path that's going to show you how to come inside and find me. As Yogananda said so beautifully, hidden in each of our hearts at that point of intuitive perception, the very center of the universe, the heart of the divine, right there. And when we're there, we then experience that point everywhere, in everyone, in everything. We feel the love, the true joy, the true wisdom. We find ourselves, ultimately, we are on the way. And God knows it. Whether we had the oil or we forgot the oil that night and we slept instead, we're on this path. We're taking all the right steps in all the right direction. And God has given us the promise. My yogis are never lost. I'm there for them. I will always be there for them. Just seek redemption, and God himself will come down.
Where are you going, my little one? In all these empty streets I went, I've seen a star rise in the east, and I'm looking for a friend. Turu-lu-lu-lu-le, turu-lu-lu-lu-le. Where are you going, good shepherd folk? From a lonely valley we ascend. A wondrous vision sent us here. We're looking for a friend. Turu-lu-lu-lu-le. Turu-lu-lu-lu-le. You learned men, where are you going? Our soul's long journey we would end. Therefore we come to Bethlehem. We're looking for a friend. Good people, let me come with you. Perhaps he's just around this bend. But whether near or far, I too have been looking for a friend.
Souls calling, make us thy own. How many years so proud of our wisdom?
Now our souls call.